You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Gervais.
Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gervais. I am a certified holistic nutritionist and the host of the show. At Food Integrity Now, we like to investigate and explore what's happening in our food supply so that you can make wise decisions for your health and for your family's health. And I'd like to give a big shout out to Ben Sound Music for our intro and outro music. Hi, it's Carol Gervais, and I am a certified holistic nutritionist, a life coach, and the host of Food Integrity Now. What you eat and how you eat can greatly affect the way you look and feel and whether or not you get sick. If your immune system is compromised, you might have brain fog, allergies, low energy, depression, have trouble sleeping, you might be overweight, or worse, have a disease. A poor diet can lead to diabetes, cancer, Alzheimer's, and virtually all other diseases. I take great pride in working with individuals and groups and seeing how they create such positive changes in their lives. I offer one-on-one coaching packages, or we can design a package just for your group. To find out more, go to foodintegritycoaching.com or call me at 415-302-7100 for your free consultation. I offer phone and Skype sessions, and this really is all about quality of life. Let me assist you to have the best quality ever. Hi, it's Carol again. Do you drink almond milk? Do you know that packaged almond milk contains all sort of nasty additives like carrageenan and barely contains any actual almonds? The good news is that you can make fresh almond milk at home in minutes. Once you taste the creamy, fresh flavor of homemade almond milk, you'll never go back. I make my almond milk at home with a Nutiana nut milk bag. It's great, easy to use, easy to clean, and makes my almond milk silky smooth. Buy yours today by searching the Nutiana nut milk bag on Amazon. That's Nutiana. Nut milk bag, or go to Nutiana.com. You're going to love this bag. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Food Integrity Now. If you love coffee, you are going to really love this show today. My guest today is Deborah DiBernardo, and she is a coffee expert. I took a class with her recently, and I just had to share some of this information that I never knew about coffee. Deborah grew up as an Italian immigrant and as a young adult settled in Spokane, where her then husband and her created the largest divorce bankruptcy practice. She left that practice to go into coffee. I recently met Deborah at a class she was giving at Eat Restaurant in Temecula, and it was all about coffee. And I was so fascinated. There was so much I didn't know about coffee, fair trade, organic. And I thought it would be really great to have her on the show to teach all of you who want to know about coffee and buying good coffee how it all works and how our daily consumption habits impact the world. Deborah, welcome to Food Integrity Now.
Thank you. Good morning, Carol.
I'm just really thrilled to have you on the show today and to have you share with our listeners your expertise on coffee and how our purchases and choices around coffee really do affect the world, our environment, and social issues. And it may be something that people haven't thought about. I really want to get into this whole coffee issue because there's a lot to talk about. So let's start out with talking about the conventional coffee. What can you tell us about conventional coffee?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Conventional coffees represent about 99% of the world's coffee, anywhere from your canned coffees that we all grew up on to the internationally known name brands. Conventional coffees are those coffees grown in a full sun or partial sun environment. So they're grown in a clear-cut environment. They're grown with quite a few chemicals, making it one of the most toxic crops grown. And considering that coffee is like the number two or three most heavily traded commodity.
I think a lot of people don't even think about that when they're buying coffee. Does it have chemicals on it? How's it grown? These are just things that I think it's important to think about. The typical coffee, when you're talking about conventional coffee, are you just talking about coffee that you go into Safeway or whatever and you buy it there, you grind it, and you bring it home?
Pretty much any coffee that doesn't have the certified organic label and sticker on it is conventional coffee. So conventional coffee can be anywhere, like we said, like what you just said, from Safeway canned coffees up to any coffee house we walk into. So conventional coffee doesn't mean quality. What it means is it's grown in a deforested environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, 99% of our coffee is grown in that environment. And this started happening more so in the 70s as food corporations started interacting more closely with third world farmers. They showed them that they could emulate our Midwest, like corn producing region, that by clear cutting, therefore, it's removing all the indigenous plants and food trees and the shade protection that had for hundreds and hundreds of years protected their coffee crops, that by removing that, they could really expand their output considerably. The coffee would grow faster, and it would produce far more on every tree. The downside was that once these farmers clear cut everything, they no longer had that natural composting action. The pests grew exponentially because you interrupted a biosystem where you don't have birds taking care of pests, you don't have small animals. So they became 100% dependent on chemicals at that point. And some of the most, you know, horrifically toxic chemicals, and I don't have the list at this moment, but anybody could Google that and it'll just lay it out for you.
You know, I don't want to single out any particular coffee house, but for example, Starbucks, most of their coffee is not organic.
Yeah, you know, Starbucks, like most roasters, offers a variety of coffees, anywhere from wonderful high-end conventional coffees to some really nice organic coffees. When you go into shops like theirs, even if they do feature some organics, they do not sell them on their bar. They don't make them a part of what they will serve you by the drink. They will make them available in their stores, available as a retail 1 pound coffee retail bag option. Did that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And what that tells me is there's not much of a demand for it at Starbucks, because if people were coming in and saying, I want a organic latte, they can't really do that because they don't sell organic milks, sell Monsanto milk, basically. But so it tells me the demand is not real high, because Starbucks are busy.
Well, I agree. The demand isn't high because we just don't know. Just like with soy or coconut oil or palm oil, people don't know that coffee is grown in such a toxic environment and we're consuming it. So what we have really experienced the last few years here is daily one-on-one talking to people, showing them the pictures. We have the pictures from when we visit farmers so we can show what a natural environment looks like versus a deforested, you know, farm. And then we also have the actual green coffee beans, that we can show the difference between a conventional coffee and this really high-end organic coffee. And let's go back to conventional coffee. Just because we're using the term conventional doesn't mean it isn't a good quality. It means it's full of chemicals. Coffee is graded, so both in conventional coffee and or organic coffee, we grade our coffees from 1 to 100 points. And the higher you get in that 100 points, the finer the quality. And I really do like to use a cheese analogy where I compare the really cheap, inexpensive coffees along the line as comparable to like a cheese whiz, a canned cheese.
Okay.
You know, it's not very good stuff. There's not much there other than caffeine. And then as you go up in quality and you get into the some of the nicer coffees, like the coffee shops that you will go in to buy a coffee, and you have maybe like a Tillamook cheddar quality cheese. And then you get into coffee like ours, the quality that we deal in, and some of the other micro roasters around the country, where it is equivalent to the finest grade cheese or the finest quality cheese you can imagine, like a Stilton blue cheese or an imported Parmesan, you know. So that's the difference in quality. Now, those can be organic or not organic. So what consumers need to be aware of is they always want to focus on organic coffee. You don't need those chemicals in your body. And again, it's like the second or third most toxic crop grown in the world. And I don't care how dark we roast a coffee here, we are not going to burn off all those chemicals that grow on a cellular level. Yep. To that bean.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to make a point here that because some of those chemicals can actually be systemic. And just if our listeners don't know exactly what that means it's in every cell. So it doesn't wash off. It doesn't burn off.
Agreed. Even though most roasters will tell you otherwise, they'll reduce, they'll minimize the concern about the chemicals. Now, the reason almost everybody buys conventional coffees is the cost. We pay easily 100% for our organic coffees, where our competitors are offering a similar product from the same exact area, the same region, and it's not certified. I literally pay 100% more for my beans. So, you know, every bean on my floor is an organic shade-grown coffee, and all my competition in the area will buy similar products from similar countries, similar coffee-growing regions, and they'll pay half as much as I do for the same type bean, the same quality, the difference only being that mine is certified organic, no chemicals, the ecosystem is intact. So we just don't know. People don't know. But as consumers, we really need to start paying attention to the environmental effect we're having on the world every time we choose a food. And not just coffee, but look at palm oil, look at coconut oil, soy. We are eradicating habitat by the thousands of acres every day all over the world.
Now, I have a question regarding organic versus fair trade. Is just because it's organic doesn't mean it's fair traded. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. I'm glad you brought that up. Fair trade is a certification that assures the consumer that the farmer is earning at least a living wage for that product. So for me, it's very important because I don't know, or most of my consumers don't know me personally. They're not going to trust when I tell them that I pay these farmers a decent living wage. I heavily rely on, and I think consumers should, on that fair trade certification, as well as organic certification. Though I have to say, all our coffees, fair trade is $1.40 a pound right now. I pay over $3 a pound for every coffee I buy. So that's double fair trade pricing.
Wow. It seems to me that if you're buying really good coffee, it's going to cost you more.
It does cost you more. Not as much as most people would imagine. Because I'm in a business, it's one of the largest traded commodities in the world, and I have a lot of competition. I can't dollar for dollar increase my costs to reflect the same margin that roasters enjoy who are dealing in lesser quality and or non-certified coffees. So I think most of us who do deal in organic coffees, we've reduced our margins, our expectations for our profits considerably. So here in Spokane, I am dollar for dollar the same price as the non-organic coffee choices in our local supermarkets or specialty markets. Please. Another very, very important consideration is quality. And within the industry, the SCAA, Specialty Coffee Association of America, they are our association. They offer classes and quality grading and just, they are our resource nationwide. And they have come up with a grading system to grade green beans starting at 1 to 100 points. The closer you get to 100, that depicts the greater quality. And it's interesting because most coffees, so you go into your usual coffee house in the morning, and typically the grade of that coffee is either a grade 2 or a grade 1, meaning the number grade is somewhere in the 70s. Maybe it reaches 80. The coffees that we are dealing with are in the top 0.5% of the highest quality graded coffees in the world. We grade coffees based on defects also. And defects are mold, mildew, diseased, immature, sour beans. And the percentage of those defects in a pound of coffee dictates the quality. So a lot of coffees are going to be 70-80% defects. So every pound, the majority of the beans are just defects. And that is what we've lived on for years and years and years, since the 50s, 60s, as American food corporations really started adopting higher margin products and replacing the great quality coffee that we used to have with these, coffee beans that should have been composted back into a field and typically were until American food corporations really got involved with these third world farmers.
And so it's kind of like follow the money kind of thing again.
It truly is follow the money. So an analogy on the cost is, here's this coffee, you go to a big box store and they have an organic fair trade coffee in a 2-3 pound bag, and it goes for $6-7 a pound. Well, it can not only be an exceptionally low quality coffee, full of defects, but it can also be what we refer to as past crop. And what this means, past crop means, is that the product didn't sell the year it was harvested. And it sat in a warehouse for a year or two or three. So once a coffee is past crop, it loses significant value because high-end roasters won't touch it as a fresh crop or as an annual crop. coffee, even green coffee, has a shelf life of approximately 1 year. Coffee has a trace amount of moisture in the bean. And as that bean sits in a warehouse, over the course of a year, it loses that moisture. And it loses, as it loses that moisture, we lose the ability to control the development of the sugar and the trace amount of fat that's in that bean. So we have a more challenging time trying to caramelize that bean and bring out the natural notes and flavors of the coffee as that bean gets older and older. So then after a year, it becomes basically impossible. So those coffees that don't sell literally sit in a warehouse and get offered at a fraction of the price. When you do see coffee, even an organic coffee, for a ridiculously wonderful price, run away. It's old. It's full of defects. It is not the same thing. And I love that cheese analogy. It's comparing a cheese whiz to maybe a Stilton blue cheese. We are, as coffee producers, we are heavily responsible for third world deforestation, which then also affects water systems and supplies in all these third world countries. I've had so many people tell me that that's just too much, that they don't care, they don't want to think about that. Then my thought is, well, how about what you're ingesting? Do you really want to ingest all these chemicals, all this mold? You're aware of that movement, the bulletproof coffee. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I've had it. I'm very familiar with it. But yeah.
Besides the additives he has for the coffee, he's been really pushing and promoting mold-free coffee. So the concern for us, way before Bulletproof ever came online, was mold in our coffee. So you want to avoid ingesting things that were never meant to be eaten, never meant to be consumed. Those beans in the past were always composted. They went back to support the soil in which, you know, they grew out of. So it's a matter of treat yourself a little better. Treat the world a little better. Carol, I'm sorry. I'm closing my eyes. I got my hands in the air and I'm.
Yeah, I know. It's what we do for the sake of convenience and cheapness and all of that. It's just unbelievable.
It's horrible. And considering one out of three of us has cancer or will have cancer, if we don't believe that that is due to the foods we eat and the air we breathe and the water we drink, then we're just being goofy.
Yeah.
It's not normal for one out of three people. So my concern is not just myself. I am very concerned about that last remaining 1% of coffee that's still grown in their natural environments. For me, that's my goal, is I want to preserve that as a resource, and I want to be able to continue to offer that to the world, to my customers.
I have a question. Going back to that grading system,
yep.
Would a responsible coffee house, maybe their owner or the people who are the manager or somebody who's, you know, knows a lot about that business, would they know the grade of their coffee?
The majority of people don't. They don't even know that their coffees are graded. They just place an order with a roaster, somebody that the price point seems very competitive or has a really good name. High-end coffee houses do know. And if you ask them and they look at you blank, then they know, uh-oh, you're in trouble. But there is this huge movement all over the country where micro roasters make sure that their customers know what they're dealing with. So like our customer there in Temecula, Eat, they know exactly what they have, where it's from, if there's a direct connection with the farmer's name, and what the grade is. So it's very important to us that our customers know exactly where their coffee is from.
Well, that's right in alignment with what I speak about often, is like knowing where your food comes from. Know your farmers. And we've gotten away from that. And so many children think food comes from the grocery store. And we've lost that connection. And you're saying the same thing with coffee.
And because we have lost that connection, that's why the majority of people have no idea that the coffee, the tea they're drinking, is probably grown in an incredible slurry of toxic chemicals. And that really is having a negative effect on us. And again, going back to coconut oil and palm oil and soy and beef, you know, we are, along with coffee, we are the big bad ones in the world. We are deforesting. We are using more chemicals than anybody. And then we turn around and we package it really beautifully. And you buy it and you drink it or you eat it. So we really do have to educate ourselves a little bit, be aware. And, you know, as we were talking about quality too, and I'm talking about grading our coffees, there is no acceptance in our industry to actually put those grades on the bags. So even if I put like a 91 or a 92 on my bag, people simply don't know what that means unless you're in the industry or unless you frequent those exquisite food, those eateries or those coffee houses, and you ask and they tell you. So again, you know, it's always going to come down to price per pound and knowing your roaster, knowing where your coffee is coming from. Because when you know your roaster, then you should know who the farmer is too. And one of the things we love to do is when we do have competitions here at our roastery, we will Skype the farmers. We'll bring our Central American farmers right here to the roast house, and we'll have an interpreter available also. And we'll introduce our friends to the farmers, and they get that direct connection. They get to ask questions. They get to see the fields. They get to see the trees. It's pretty glorious.
That's wonderful. So I have a question about shelf life. You talked about the green beans. That's basically 1 year. But once you've roasted your coffee and you bring it home, one of the things that you mentioned in the class, that coffee really only lasts, 21 days or something like that?
Roughly 21 days. And the reason for that, as we're roasting coffee, that trace amount of moisture that's in a bean is converted to a CO2 gas. And that gas pushes the sugar and the fat. And again, the fat's so trace that you can't even measure it. But that CO2 pushes that fat and sugar toward the outside of the bean. It extends the cellular structure of the coffee. And what we're doing is we're using that CO2 to control the development of that bean. So how much do we want to caramelize that bean? How far do we need to go in the roast to really maximize and bring out the flavors of that coffee? So here you have the CO2 that's created in the roasting process. As the coffee finishes roasting and we drop it into our cooling tray, that coffee is off-gassing. And that's a term we use. It's off-gassing, and it will continue to off-gas for approximately 21 days. When all the CO2 is gone, the coffee is pretty much flat. It's dead.
Wow, that is such great information, because I think a lot of people think you just put it in the freezer or you put it in the refrigerator and, you know, it'll last 6 months.
And, you know, a lot of people and a lot of roasters will encourage people to freeze their coffee. We're of the belief that that would be equivalent to freezing Maytag blue cheese. You just don't do it. It changes the structure of the product itself. So coffee's like fine wine. Once you open a bottle of wine, you have a time period in which you should consume it in order to really experience it as it's meant to be. Yeah, so we basically tell people, don't buy any more coffee than what you could use in a week or two. Yeah, enjoy it. You know, if you're going to be buying high-end organic coffees, you want to enjoy it. And you've got this beautiful 2-week shelf, 3 weeks, but 2 weeks is the perfect window to focus on. And well, it's like I don't stock up on blue cheese. I buy what I'm going to use that day or maybe the next day. You know, I go to a party, I buy enough for the party. Same thing with coffee. I don't buy my coffee anymore. I just take it home from work. But
right.
But I never take home more than what I can drink in a week. And it's really interesting because when we are working with our coffee shop customers, and they'll call and they'll have a problem. As they're pulling espresso shots, they're not getting the crema they should. The coffee's flat. The first thing you ask is, what's the date on your coffee bag? So, you know, controlling how you buy is so important. You want to just truly appreciate that product.
How rare are you?
We are so rare that in the San Francisco Good Food Awards a couple of years ago, of the 200 roasters competing in that national competition for the country's best coffee, we were the only roaster that is committed 100% to sustainably grown organic coffees. We won along with a couple of other roasters. They usually have a half a dozen to a dozen roasters that will win countrywide. But again, of everybody, we were the only one that is committed 100% to this business model. And it is a unique model, and it's one I'm committed to. But sharing this model is so important to me that we do, you know, we compete almost toe-to-toe with other roasters' price points.
The average person, how do they get really good quality coffee then if they're not buying from you? What do you suggest?
You know, I did want to point out one other thing, too. Since the Good Food Awards, we have since won three more of our coffees have won national competition just this last winter as the country's best espresso, best single origin. So we're making a little bit of headway. We're getting the word out there. It's kind of forcing other roasters to expand their offerings, so not just conventionals, but some organics and some higher end organics. Though, you know, I almost have an issue with roasters who have just a couple of organics to meet customer expectation because they're doing it to bring them in, yet they're using the old model to support themselves and to reap those big margins, those greater margins. But how do you find great coffee? I think, again, it really is a matter of checking local coffee roasters, exploring, asking questions. Websites are fabulous resources. And if they're not pushing and promoting their sustainable efforts and their certified coffees, run the other way. Don't keep supporting the old model.
Do you sell to the individual? Like, can somebody go to your website and order a pound of coffee?
We do. We do have probably 20, 30 different coffees on our website. And how that works is when people order online, we process their order, we roast, and we ship within 24 hours. As long as that's a weekday. So Monday through Thursday, you know, the order's going to get roasted. It's going to get shipped the same day or within 24 hours.
And we do appreciate those orders. That is what probably is saving most of us exceptional high-end roasters is our online sales with, you know, in food-savvy consumers.
What is your website? Our listeners can check it out, and if they want to get some really good coffee, try it out. What's your website?
Oh, I'd be happy to share that. So it's roasthousecoffee.com, and that's roast as in roasting coffee. So also, if I have just a moment, I wanted to share too this whole cold brew coffee phenomena that's just sweeping the country.
Yeah, let's hear about that.
Oh, cold brew coffee. 40% more caffeine, 60-70% less acidity, and great taste. So cold coffee, we have directions online how to make your own if you have none available in your community. This is not something anybody wants to ship around the country. The only cold brew that is available online has preservatives, is pasteurized, you know, so it's just not the same thing. Pick up a pound of wonderful organic coffee and you're just simply soaking a pound of coffee coarse ground in a gallon of water for 24 hours at room temperature and straining it. And then once you strain it, now you have this beautiful organic espresso concentrate that will sit in your refrigerator for about 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And then you just add it to water, add it to milk, and you have this lovely, very low acid coffee option.
Wonderful. Well, one of the things, the class again that I took, is you featured one coffee and you served it to us, I think, four or five different ways. And it was so interesting because I think we had a pour over, we had a cold brew, we had a press. What else did we have in that class?
We had drip.
Drip.
Yeah, drip, pour over, French press, and
cold,
I think
cold brew.
Yeah, I had limited tools with me. Typically when we do it here at the roastery, we'll use Chemex, AeroPress, espresso, all those options. And it really is amazing when the coffee brew method you use produces different tastes, even though you're using the same coffee.
I was amazed by it. I mean, it tasted totally different all the different ways.
Isn't it? It's so interesting. Even for myself, there are some of our coffees that I just don't care for brewed hot. But yet I love them when they're brewed cold. So it really is. It's interesting. We have suggestions on our website how to brew that coffee. What's the best brew method for that coffee? But also, we're very available to talk when people have questions. If they buy our coffee and they're concerned with the outcome, all they have to do is email me at hello@roasthousecoffee.com. And I'm very interactive. I spend most of my day just chatting with people, working the coffee bar, taking them through different brew methods. But we do the same thing with our online customers also.
Wow, that's great. You know, I'm sure there are going to be some additional questions from our listeners. One last thing I want to talk about is nutritional value of really good coffee. Do you have any statistics regarding nutritional value?
I think like most of us, I'm reading more and more about the medicinal benefits for the heart, for the liver, for the brain. But let's make sure it's organic so that even while we're trying to derive those benefits, we're not ingesting all those chemicals. You know, I did want to share something, too, about deforestation. So when we started the company 6 years ago, my roaster, Dave Ryer, went to Guatemala to source some coffees for us. And we were invited by one of our importers to go down because they wanted to take this small community of Iche Indians who were farming and selling their coffees to coyotes who who were selling it to co-ops, who were selling it to exporters, importers, and so on. And these Indians were getting 10, 20 cents a pound for their coffee. But this coffee was grading so crazy high, wonderful, in the high 80s, the low 90s. So we went with this importer, and Dave spent a week down there tasting coffee of all 50 different farmers from this community. And he actually chose this one farmer's coffee, and her name was Jacinta. And we used her coffee for about 4.5 years. We featured it here at Roast House, and it was a favorite. And it won the Good Food Awards in 2014 as the country's best coffee. And this last year, we lost the ability to bring in her coffee. She's not exporting this year due to global warming. So with sustained temperature increases of 5-6 degrees in the highlands of Guatemala, the Roya fungus, which is a fungus that attacks coffee trees, has overridden her trees to the point where she has no coffee to export. We've also experienced that with a second community from the Chiapas region of Mexico. And this is a community of farmers that their jungle, it's a Lancondin jungle, near Chiapas, Mexico, and it's certified by the Smithsonian as one of the most pristine ecosystems left on Earth.
Wow.
And they are overrun with Roya also, and they are not exporting this year. So, you know, when we say that we're not want to know or we don't care about the impact our consumer practices are having on the world, look what just happened. And if we do we not realize that in the next so many years, the next 10, 20 years, we are losing more and more and more of these farmers due to fungus, due to global warming, that we might not have a choice when it comes to genetically modifying coffee in the future so that we actually have it.
Ugh.
So we really do, as consumers, need to pay attention and take some responsibility and not continue supporting that model that is eradicating coffee around the world.
Yeah, well said. And, you know, I think you've given our listeners a lot of food for thought here, and something that we need to pay attention to and be aware of and make responsible choices.
And thank you for being there to be that voice, because we're tiny. You know, we're a 4-person company. How far, how wide can we take this information without somebody like you? Thank you very, very much for being there.
Oh, you are welcome. It's people like you and your company that we love to endorse, because you're doing the right thing. And, you know, the more people that do something like this, the better off, you know, our environment and our health will be. So you're an example.
And I'm confident that we can change the world. We just do it one person at a time, and boom.
Yep. Thanks for being a guest on Food Integrity Now. This has been such great information, and I hope it shapes how our listeners make their choice around coffee. So, and thanks to our listeners for being on the show, and we'll be back with another great show in the very near future.